Ben Glover, welcome to The String. Good to see you.
Great to see you, Craig.
Are you known as the Irish guy in Nashville in the music community? And how many other Irish or Northern Irish cats are there that leave you either? How white leopard are you in this scene?
You know, there's not a lot of us here. You know, Nashville is, it's not like the coast. It's not like New York or Boston where there's Irish everywhere you turn. So one of the things I like about it is that I guess we're a rare species in these parts. But yeah, it's an easy tag to say the Irish Ben Glover, you know, the people in the community kind of know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So you're from the town of Glenarm, Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I've happy to say that I've actually traveled on the Antrim coast, that northern coastline. And it's a spectacular place. It's a place of beautiful rocky cliffs, and the shoreline is remarkable. They filmed Game of Thrones up there mm-hmm. for the crazy landscapes. And I looked up your town. It's just a village.
It is a village, yeah. It's when I grew up there, there was probably 400 people. It's your quintessential little quaint seaside Irish village. Not a lot happens there. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
Typical small town. But as you say, you're right on the water. And I think that is one of the things that really shaped me and I guess shapes anybody who grows up there. You're right on the water, so you're on the edge of things. Being on the edge of things gives you a different kind of perspective, I think. It's very rugged land. It's very raw land. You're exposed to the elements. And I think those things affect us and carve us as people more than we realize.
Right, fair enough, yeah. Shorebound is at least your second album cover with a seaside photo on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what the effect of hearing the sound of the ocean means. So,
yeah.
But then again, 400 people in a small town, how does that shape somebody's growing up's ability to get into music? You know, on one level, you could say that might leave you with fewer inputs, fewer sources of influence, but probably a much richer opportunity to play for friends and neighbors and get good in a supportive environment.
Exactly. I mean, I did my first gig when I was 13, and it was in the local bar. It was an Irish traditional session. And by nature, they are, you know, 10, 15 people sitting in the corner of the pub playing acoustically, singing songs and playing tunes. And that was my education for those first few years. So you're right, it was a very supportive community. I grew up in a house that wasn't necessarily musical, but a big thing in Ireland is that at family gatherings, Christmas, weddings, funerals even, you're called on to do what they call a piece, which is a song or a poem. And I think that's important as well, because you realize that that thing, that creative expression that you do in front of people is a way that gets a connection. So I think that is a foundation. But growing up in a small village, there's not a lot to do. So like there's no discos, there's no cinema. So for me, I gravitated towards playing music. And I guess in my head, I was out on the road with Bob Dylan and all these guys in my head. I was dreaming. You know, I was dreaming of America. I was dreaming of being on the road. So
when did you get your first guitar or instrument?
There was always guitars in the house. My father and brothers played. So I think I strummed the first guitar about 11 or 12.
Great.
And I remember writing at the same, like writing songs right at the same time as I started playing the guitar.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah,
you just so were just like, why not say what I got to say?
Yeah, they just came together at the same time. So the small village, yeah, there was a lot of support. And I mean, I think small villages are just good places to grow up in. It's for me, I think you get to know who you are possibly quicker because you're not lost in the crowd
mm-hmm.
and you're not finding your way as much as you do in a city. And there's both negative and positive elements to that.
How did you start your relationship with Nashville, Tennessee?
So 10 years ago, I made my first trip over here. A manager I had at the time said, do you want to go to Nashville and do some co-writing? I'd never co-written a song in my life, but I said, absolutely, I'll go for it. So I come over here and immediately just felt a connection with the place. And that was it. And I also made, I met my wife-to-be on that trip.
Oh, wow.
So right, the very first trip, it had made a deep impact on me, both on a personal level, most importantly. And then second to that was the music.
Writers, journalists were calling your feeling and sound Americana quite a ways back. And what elements of Irish music are in you, they're subtle. Mm-hmm. It's there, story, some melodic ideas, but it's you're not a hybrid of Irish traditional and American country. You're quite a Nashville Americana sounding cat. What do you think explains that?
Well, I guess it was the music I listened to when I was growing up. At the very start, I listened to a lot of Irish folk music, but then I gravitated towards Bob Dylan, and Dylan then I guess guided everything I listened to after that. You know, if you get obsessed with Dylan, it seems to be a pattern. So it was, you know, then I discovered American folk music through that. So it was Woody Guthrie, and then it was other, just all the great American singer-songwriters. You know, it was John Prine, it was Tom Waits, and, you know, my father would always listen to, like, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash in the car. Oh, so as a kid, all those things, I was always around and very exposed to American folk, probably American folk more than American country. Mm-hmm. And, I just felt at ease with the feel of that stuff. Because ultimately, Irish folk music and American folk music and American country music, they all try to tell stories. And I think as long as that is the main thing, then that connection between the Celtic stuff and American stuff, it rings true.
And you did wind up co-writing with a number of people in Nashville. I know Gretchen Peters was one of your early champions. And talk about that relationship, if that was one of the first that led to this pool where we're talking about Amy Spies, Angel Snow, Mary Gaucher, Kim Ritchie, and Nielsen Hubbard, who produced the record.
You know, it was Mary Gaucher who I have to thank for a lot of these relationships.
Right.
Mary and I met on one of my first or second trips to Nashville. Mickey Raphael introduced me to her. He played my first record, and he says, "You need to know Mary Gaucher." So he introduced me to her, and we became good friends. And then Mary somewhat took me under her wing. We toured a lot together, and then she was responsible for introducing me to Gretchen, if you want, you know, and that's how that relationship came about. And it's like anything, once you get in the community and once you get in the circle, then other people, it's easier to meet other people. And I just got lucky. I fell into a really an amazingly talented bunch of artists and people. Gretchen and I toured together. That's how we first met. She invited me out on the road in the UK about 5 or 6 years ago. And then we started writing together.
You and Mary Gaucher wrote a pretty bleak little murder song here called Catbird Seat.
Yeah.
What was on your minds?
You know, that we actually wrote that on tour together during car rides. When this was an Irish tour about 4 years ago. And, you know, I don't recall the motivation for the song. I think we were just trying to tell a story. I think we were sensing that ominous times were coming. And I guess we were tapping into that. And it is a murder song. There's a lot of mystery to it. It's not that clear exactly what happens in the song. But it's dark. It's definitely dark. But the thing I do remember about writing that song was that we laughed an awful lot. And it was quite a joyful experience writing that song with such a dark nature, which is an odd thing to say.
On the extreme opposite end is Kindness, which you actually wrote solo, performed solo, and you remark in the bio that it's, if you were going to choose just your own personal testimony. So my question about the concept and the notion of kindness is, you know, what does it mean in terms of how far one takes it? We're in this interesting time where we're debating, you know, how much kindness we can afford to show people when they're, you know, potentially when we really see them causing harm, and that there are limits, right? Kindness is a virtue. It's a little different than mercy. It's a little different than being nice. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean, really?
Well, what it means to me is, I think it's one of the most important things that we can show ourselves, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. We have to show ourselves kindness. And it's deeper than self-love or self-care, and deeper than self-respect. And then we have to show those around us kindness. And we have to show our enemies kindness. And that doesn't mean that we let them off, or we go easier on them, or we back down from the fight. But we can still fight the good fight. In fact, the only way to fight the good fight is with kindness. Because then if kindness isn't involved, it's not the good fight. I believe the only way to make serious change in the world is from a compassionate standpoint. And compassion is not soft, and kindness is not soft. They are warrior virtues. They are probably the strongest virtues that you can carry onto any battlefield. We're living in, as you say, we're living in very seriously dark times with, there's so much uncertainty, so much fear. And the only way to battle it is in a kind, compassionate front. And I come from a place, and I grew up in a society which had a lot of disconnect and isolation and divide, you know, and I grew up at a time when the troubles were still going on. Yeah. And Belfast was only 30 miles away, so you're very aware of what's going on in Belfast. So I've seen what isolation and division and hate does. And what it doesn't do is bring sides together. Yeah. It doesn't matter how polarized people are politically or in their views. You got to get to the middle ground. And the way to the middle ground is with compassion and kindness. Mm-hmm. So it's needed more than ever.
Great. Well, the new album is Shorebound. Ben Glover, it's very good to talk to you.
Craig, thank you very much.